What's up, fellas? It's Bush here. Before we get in today's Dynasty podcast, I want to shout out our Dynasty Decisions 2.0. You can get a free Dynasty Decisions 2.0 as an annual mother flocker with only our promo code FSE on Flock Fantasy. We break down your team live on stream, and then within a calendar week, we send you your three biggest decisions to make, an action plan, a snapshot of your team that you can take with you. All of that is available on Flock Fantasy, in addition to our trade calculator, our My Teams, My Portfolio Manager, and so much more. Definitely be sure to check that out if you guys are interested. So now let's get into today's Dynasty podcast. Absolute sickos like Danny and I have been doing Dynasty rookie drafts for months now. But for those of you guys that have lives, unlike us, for those of you guys that have lives, you're coming back to the scene. Maybe your Dynasty rookie draft hasn't happened yet. I would venture to say like maybe 20, 30% of you haven't had your rookie drafts yet. Or maybe you're just doing Dynasty startups or you just want some advice on the rookies. We're going to go through an updated top 36, top 30 or so rookie rankings tier list. We both most recently updated our rankings on the site to reflect some of the buzz we heard in OTAs, mini camps, training camps, and whatnot. So Danny, let's get into this. We're going to do it super flex, half tight end premium. So that is the frame of mind that we're going through this. For those of you guys that need one quarterback rankings, we have them on the site. And for those of you guys that don't play in tight end premium, just kind of knock the tight ends down just a little bit. So Jeremiah Love, first guy we're going to talk about. Nothing changed from the first iteration of this video, which will be linked down below in the description. He was the best prospect in the draft, a generational running back prospect. When you look at our Dynasty startup rankings, both you and I have him inside the first round, and everybody consensus on the site agrees that he's at least a top 20 asset.
Yeah, very simple. Super stud level running back prospect, goes in the top three of the NFL draft. Yeah, sure. Maybe, you know, Tyler Allgeier is a little hiccup to get over early and they want to run a committee. And obviously we're hearing Nathaniel Hackett say all the bullshit right now. Like, I'm sure there are some people that drafted Jeremiah Love thinking like, oh, like I don't love his redraft projection in the first 5 weeks. But redraft projection in the first 5 weeks isn't the sole reason why you drafted him. You drafted him to compete with the names of Bijan, Gibbs, Genty for the next 5 to 6 years.
Yeah, he's a 21-year-old running back. Let's take a chill pill on his first September of fantasy production, where it is going to be a bit of a struggle, I'd imagine, probably like 13 fantasy points per game or something. But hopefully by Thanksgiving, October area, we're looking at a guy who's the full-fledged bell cow for this team. And we don't know what's going to happen with the Cardinals at quarterback or, you know, this season in general, but hopefully by at least 2027, they have that figured out.
If we were confident he'd get the full workload right away, instead of being a third round pick, he would be a top 15 overall pick.
Yeah. And the Cardinals right now are like one of the favorites to land like the first pick of the draft. So if Love has, let's say, a 14 point per game running back 19 season as a rookie, he's probably going to have a fresh Arch Manning or Dante Moore or whatever throwing the football. It'd be hilarious if Arch Manning was the quarterback of the Cardinals throwing to Marvin Harrison Jr. to pass on the legacy there. Cardale Tate for both of us is the kind of tier two asset here. You don't have Lemon in this tier, so we'll save him for a second. But Cardale Tate, has anything really changed outside of the fact that now, you know, we're starting to see a little bit of the buzz materialize? Danny is the highest person, or not the highest person on the site. Avery and Nathan are a little bit ahead of you as far as their ranking of Cardale Tate. But I mean, he's the number one receiver. He's a top five pick in the NFL draft. Cam Ward, if anybody watched the quarterback documentary, seems like he's generally wired the right way to take a step forward. So you're kind of investing in the offense, investing in the future number one here.
Yeah, investing in the offense, investing in Brian Daboll coming over, who I do believe has no fear in trusting early rookies. Like we saw it with Neighbors. We saw it with Tyrone Tracy. If you are one of the best players on his offense, he has no problem featuring you. And we've seen a lot of offense coordinators. I mean, Nathaniel Hackett is the prime example where it's like, oh, the rookie's got to go out there and earn it. The rookie's got to show why he's the number one at his position. Cardale Tate's done that all spring. And Brian Daboll has definitely taken note. The first thing he did as the hire of that team is pound the table on draft day. Say, hey, I understand, Robert, you want an edge. I understand, Robert, you want a defensive player. I need my number one wide receiver. Nothing has really changed. I think Wandale Robinson's a decent compliment across the middle of the field. But if Cam Ward's going to take that step, it's because Cardale Tate commanded 140 targets and was a top 15 level NFL wide receiver from the get-go.
I'm a little lower on Cardale Tate's immediate projection. Like I have in my projections, Cardale Tate projected for 130 targets. I have Wandale Robinson projected for 119 targets. So I do think it'll be a bit of a tighter split target share-wise between those two guys in year one. But the thing that is encouraging about Cardale Tate's immediate and long-term projection is that Brian Daboll is generally a very pass-heavy coach. I have Cam Ward throwing the ball 577 times this year, 58% pass rate. So I do think there's going to be plenty of volume to go around. Whether it's good volume or bad volume is remains to be seen. But Carnell Tate, I think that the baseline median projection is kind of to expect what Tetteri and McMillan did as a rookie. At least that's the way that I'm looking at Carnell Tate at this point in time. And in dynasty startups and rookie drafts, if you guys need an immediate contributor, you could probably get one in Carnell Tate. If you're a competitive team, maybe you'd want to move off of that selection, that 102 selection, to go out and get a real hammer producer. That's definitely something you could do, but Carnell Tate probably going to be pretty productive. Mekhi Lemon, I guess I got to explain myself because he is in the same tier for me. It simply comes down to this, and you're actually right there in terms of overall startup value with me on Mekhi Lemon. It comes down to the fact that I had Mekhi Lemon ranked higher as a prospect going into the NFL draft. I thought him and Carnell Tate very comparable. They were the two best receivers in the class for me. I think Mekhi Lemon does fit this offense very well. This offense in Philadelphia is shifting towards more of a Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay type scheme. Sean Mannion, of course, was a backup quarterback for the Packers for a long time there. Matt LaFleur was his coach at the time, so I think Mekhi Lemon is going to be like, think of how they used Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp and all those receivers in those Rams type of schemes. I think Lemon's perfectly suited for a role like that. And whether it's Jalen Hurts long-term or short-term, Hurts takes a step forward, plays better, or maybe he's out of there this time next year and they bring in a new quarterback. I just want to invest in the talent that Mekhi Lemon was, because had he gone in the top 10, top 15 overall picks of the NFL draft, we would have been talking about, Danny, his best comparable prospect in the model being CeeDee Lamb. Like, we're talking about a player that was a very, very good prospect, a junior, won the Biletnikoff, lots of talent around him in college. And again, whether it's year one, year two, or year three, I expect him by the end of, you know, his rookie contract to already have been very productive and have some fantasy production under his belt and some value accumulation given his talent level.
Yeah, my thing here, again, I do really like Mekhi Lemon. He would be my next rated receiver. I just do have Carnell Tate in his own tier. It's been that way since after the NFL draft. It stayed that way for me. Realistically, when I look at it, even if you view them as comparable prospects, it is a big difference in terms of where they went. Top four overall draft capital versus 19th overall, I believe, is where Mekhi went. Definitely a significant bump there. And on top of that, I had a higher grade on Carnell Tate. I think the Titans landing spot, people kind of gave it hell for, he could have went to the Commanders. He could have went to the Chiefs. He could have went to all these other spots. But I look at this Titans landing spot, I'm thinking, what's stopping him from legitimately commanding a 25% to 28% target share from day one? Like, at least with Philadelphia, I can point to Devontae Smith. I can point to they want to run the football again with Saquon Barkley, because when they were at their best in 2024, that was what worked. Like, I just have a hard time getting there from a specific redraft projection. And again, if I had the player higher to begin with, and I also have him from a redraft perspective, 16, 17 picks higher, I just can't really view them in the same tier.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, in my projections, part of the difference is that I have Hurts for 553 pass attempts this year, which would be a high for him since 2021, I think, was the last time that they were a pass-heavy approach. So I do think that the shift in offensive coordinator is going to result in more pass attempts, and the Jeff Stoutland kind of era is over. No more Jason Kelce, no more, you know, pounding the rock. I do think they're going to throw the ball quite a bit more, which is why I have Lemon a little bit higher. So moving into the next tier, we have Jordan Tyson, Fernando Mendoza, and Jadarian Price. Now, the only difference between the last time you and I did these rankings right after the NFL draft and now is that Mendoza has since moved down a little bit, partially because of the immediate redraft projection of the fact that Kirk Cousins, it sounds like, is going to start a couple of games. Mendoza, usually when you're drafted first overall, we just automatically assume you're going to start from week one, the way Cam Moore did, the way that Bryce Young did. Like, in recent years, the first overall pick just starts games. So the capitulation, I guess, that both of us made in our rankings is that we do prefer Jordan Tyson in a rookie draft, at least at this point in time. But if you needed a quarterback, they're all in the same tier, so you could always just take Mendoza ahead of him still.
Yeah, the way my tier three works is, the difference we discussed is I do have Carnell Tate a tier of his own. I do have Mekhi more so at the top of this tier. Is I have the two receivers in a row, Mekhi Lemon and Jordan Tyson, both kind of going off the board between 62 to 75 overall on Underdog right now, I believe is their ADP. And then with Mendoza, obviously goes later on Underdog, but contextually we understand why. Underdog, one quarterback league. Underdog, again, if he's not going to be starting all 17 games, he can go a little bit lower. From a Dynasty Superflex perspective, though, even if Mendoza doesn't even start the first six games, like I mentioned it with Jeremiah Love, we're not drafting them for the first 5 or 6 games of their rookie years. We're drafting them for the next 5, 6, 7 plus years. And when I look at Mendoza again, first overall pick, insulation, tied to a situation and coach I believe in, has a true number one weapon with Brock Bowers, true number one running back with Ashton Jeanty. Like, if he's the type of prospect that I thought he was, which was a legitimate first overall caliber player, I think he's going to fit seamlessly with Clint Kubiak.
Yeah, and I think all of us kind of collectively agree in startups, he's more of like a mid-round quarterback, a guy you'd get as your QB2 in a long-term kind of rebuild situation. But like you said, he has weapons around him to take the step forward as long as he can adjust to the system, which I think is going to be an adjustment for him. It wouldn't shock me if he has like a Cam Ward-like rookie season also, which is why I kind of moved him down, just because it's a complex system. It's a young team, not a good receiver core outside of the Jeanty and Bowers types there. I do expect Mendoza to not be very fantasy relevant. Let's just put it that way. Even if he's starting games, I don't expect him to be very fantasy relevant early on in his career, which is why I made the capitulation to Jordan Tyson being ahead of him, because Jordan Tyson, at least as we're so far hearing, and as I go through like Saints projections and whatnot, it's going to be an up-tempo offense. I expect him to throw the ball quite a bit. I'm a little bit conversely lower on Chris Olave than I was this time last year. Mm. So Jordan Tyson being a big part of that also factors in. Me and you both had concerns about Jordan Tyson, the prospect. My comp for him was like Rashad Bateman. Your comp was like Jerry Jeudy. People wanted to throw him in the stratosphere of the Justin Jeffersons and the Jamar Chase, Malik Nabers caliber prospects. We just weren't there. But I will say, like, I've moved him up in my rankings a little bit because I do like what I'm hearing so far, as long as he can stay healthy, which is obviously still a concern for Jordan Tyson.
Yeah, I also just trust the vision of the offense here too with Kellen Moore. Obviously, I'm a little bit higher on Tyler Shuck than you are. I know they're going to run with a ton of pace. So when I'm looking at just the utilization we saw from a guy like Jawan Johnson, that more so felt forced because they didn't have the environment at wide receiver after Chris Olave to support multiple guys. So Jawan Johnson got the main benefit there. I do think now that you have a full-fledged established top two at wide receiver, we could be seeing Chris Olave and Jordan Tyson truthfully bounce weeks back to back.
Yeah, and I'm lower on Shuck comparatively from a talent perspective, but I'm high on the volume of the offense. I think there's going to be plenty of volume to go around. So Jadarian Price, the last guy of this tier, as much as I want to move him higher than this, the prospect profile just doesn't allow me to. Like, because I actually do think if we just said redraft projection, who has the best season of these three guys, it probably is Jadarian Price, just given the fact that in redraft, he projects with George Halani as his main competition for touches. And Jadarian Price, the prospect, while he had warts, did have some redeeming qualities specifically on film. Those people who don't watch film and just look at the numbers are not going to like Jadarian Price, the prospect. But people who actually, like you and I, broke down film breakdowns of all of these guys. And for whatever reason, if you guys need film breakdowns and, you know, player cards that we can showcase throughout this stream, maybe I'll paste them on the screen. Our Dynasty Rookie Draft Guide was updated right after the NFL draft, and a lot of that stuff is still very much applicable. So if you want to check that out, that is available on Flock, and you can also get it for free when you sign up on Underdog. But Jadarian Price, immediate projection, he's got opportunity for touches. So if you're in a rookie draft and you're like 105, 106, I need a running back to help me compete in my flex or whatever the case is, Jadarian Price is your guy.
Yeah, I'm still high on the Jadarian Price. Again, you mentioned that we are higher on the film in comparison to maybe what the analytics community thought of Jadarian Price. And ultimately, just a lot of opportunity. This is a team that, yeah, we don't believe is going to be number one in scoring again like they were last year, but at least going to be a top 12 level offensive projection. Yeah, Walker, it was annoying seeing him come off the field. But the number one trait that we saw of Jadarian Price was his vision, was his contact balance, was his ability to run between the tackles. Sure, it was a limited sample working behind Jeremiah Love, but I do believe he's a more trustworthy down-to-down runner than maybe last year's Seattle staff thought about Kenneth Walker.
Yeah, and I think comparatively, you keep seeing me near the end of the rankings here on both Mendoza, Price, and Tyson. It's more just that I view a larger gap, I guess, between these two guys and these three guys than I did maybe 3 months ago when we were first doing rookie drafts. Like, I thought they were a little bit more interchangeable at that time, whereas I do think that Lemon and Tate were just head and shoulders the better prospects in my mind for a lot of the case. Like, as good as Mendoza was as a quarterback, Price was as a running back, Tyson was as a wide receiver prospect, me and you both had like top 10 grades on Lemon and Tate.
Not to get accused of being lazy here, but the way I have it ranked right now is I have Carnell Tate as my 26th ranked player. Then I have Mekhi Lemon at 40, Jordan Tyson at 41, Mendoza at 42, and then I have Jadarian Price at 48.
Yeah, I guess the difference for me, because those guys are in the 60s for me, like this tier of guy. Yeah. It's just, I have so many of those competitive assets because I think that it's a good strategy in startups in general to go competitive this year because you can get great value. So I have like a lot of those Devontae Smith, Zay Flowers type of guys ahead of some of those younger receivers. But anyways, let's get into the next tier of guys. This is where like the fall off was in rookie drafts. For those of you guys that weren't doing rookie drafts 3 months ago, a large portion of us, we're trying to trade up from 107, 108, 109 to get into the top six. And I do still think that is kind of the meta as far as if you guys are just doing your rookie drafts now. Kenyon Sadiq in half tight end premium is our kind of collective 107. I do actually have Casey Concepcion at 107 myself, but I'll let you talk about Sadiq because you are the highest on him of the two of us.
Yeah, he missed some camp with the hernia surgery that he had, I believe in May, if I'm not mistaken. So we haven't gotten a full glimpse at him, but basically everything I said in terms of the prospect profile, big time athlete, elite with the ball in his hands. I thought he was a top 20 caliber pick. He ends up going in the top 20 of the NFL draft. And realistically, when I'm looking at it, Garrett Wilson, I do believe is a number one wide receiver, but I also just think the Jets could be a much more alluring situation next year. They're probably going to win, you know, somewhere between 3 to 6 games would be about my estimate, give or take. Their defense is going to be bad again. Their offense, even though I'm more optimistic than expectation, probably still going to be somewhere between the 23rd to 28th ranked offense in the league. And not to mention with Sadiq himself, I thought he was always going to be a better player in year two than he was year one. If he's the number two target on a team that has an Arch Manning, that has a Dante Moore, that has a Drew Mestemaker, that has one of those top end quarterbacks in next year's class, then all of a sudden you're talking about a guy that could potentially be a top four, top five overall tight end on the market. We both thought the ceiling was there eventually where, and then obviously, you know, you go with your Bowers, you go with your Lovelands for the future. But outside of those two names, if you had to pick one tight end to be the dynasty tight end 1-3 years from now, Sadiq would be my pick.
Yeah, I mean, so in my like context of the dynasty tight end landscape, I'm the lowest along with Zach and Davis on the site on Sadiq because he is a little bit more of a coin flip prospect. Now in underdog drafts and whatnot, he's going so late that I'm just taking a crap ton of shares of him because he goes at pick 161. Yep. But in dynasty startups, you have to make that decision a lot sooner. And I like, as much as like you can poke holes in Sam Laporta and Kyle Pitts and Tucker Kraft and Harold Fant and some of the other tight ends that go kind of around Sadiq, I trust the proven guys a little bit more. So in a dynasty rookie draft, if you're on the board at 107 and you're thinking about taking Sadiq in a half tight end premium, I would exhaust your options to trade for a tight end first. If that's why you're taking Sadiq, like you need somebody to produce right away. If you can go out and get, you know, Tyler Warren with 107 plus, or you can go out and get Sam Laporta plus or Kyle Pitts plus or somebody like that for the 107, I would probably just do that personally. But I do think that Sadiq is a really good fit for teams who are rebuilding, because as a 21-year-old tight end, long-term, like you said, you cannot expect that the Jets quarterback situation hopefully will get figured out at some point, and Sadiq can kind of gain value from that perspective.
Yeah, and similar thing in terms of just trusting the process. You're not drafting Casey Concepcion because you think, oh my God, he goes at 120 and I think he's a top 50 asset on the market. Like, that's not why you're doing it. You're drafting him at 118.5 because you're like, oh, he's a young upside rookie wide receiver. He's being downweighed by his situation, but I think he's talented enough to overcome it. Like, especially in terms of his redraft costs on underdog right now. But I think from a dynasty perspective, the thing that's so exciting about the Browns in terms of this new regime, in terms of the new look that they want for their offense, is that they're going to be picking a high again next year. Like I just said with the Jets, whether it's a Mestemaker, whether it's a Dante Moore, whether it's an Arch Manning, they will have a significant quarterback upgrade next year. And I truthfully still do believe if one of the rookie receivers on this team is going to become the Zay Flowers, is going to become the pure number one volume target in this offense, it would be Casey Concepcion. And I have voiced this throughout the summer, but truthfully, I'm a little bit more concerned now from Harold Fannin's perspective, because I do believe in Casey Concepcion. I do believe in Denzel Boston. I do think they're talented enough receivers to at least take that clear number one moniker off of Harold Fannin. And I think if any of these three were to do it, Casey Concepcion would be my bet.
Yeah, I actually am the highest other than Davis. So a slappy alley here on the site here. I just liked the prospect more than Sadiq at his position, respectively. Respectively. I'm turning into Danny. I'm spending too much time with you. Casey Concepcion to me has a better chance of being the number one than Boston by a decent margin. So that's why I have him kind of ranked aggressively. If Boston was never drafted to the Browns in the second round, I think that everyone would have this opinion, like that Concepcion was like the clear 107 in the class. But yeah, you and I both like the prospect. I compared him to like Chris Olave. You compared him to like Emmanuel Sanders. Like you drop young Chris Olave on the Browns. I think that they're just generally the way that you said about the Jets, what if they're 23 to 28th ranked offense in the league? I actually think that's more true of the Browns than it is of the Jets. I expect the Jets to be a bottom three offense in the NFL. Whereas I think that the Browns can actually maybe be half decent if Watson plays, you know, below average football, or Shedeur Sanders is like maybe slightly better than people think.
I want you to look at the camera and tell the people right now, Corey, that you have more faith in more faith in Deshaun Watson being a serviceable quarterback this year than Geno Smith.
It's more that I have more faith in the scheme the Browns are running, because I think Todd Monken's a better coach than Frank Reich. And I also think that the Browns collective weapons group may be better than the Jets collective weapons group.
I don't know, man.
Collective.
I mean,
I think Wilson's better than any receiver they have. I think that Breece Hall's better than Quinshon Judkins. But I think with Judkins and Samson, with Fan and Concepcion, Boston, Judy, I think that collectively they're actually pretty decent.
I don't know, man. You got Cooper, you got Mitchell, you got Sadiq, you got Hall. Maybe. You got a much better offensive line situation. Like, to me, if you're talking about just the surrounding talent, the Jets have one of the better units in the league. The only question mark is how Geno Smith plays. And I say Geno Smith is a much less question mark than what Deshaun Watson is at this point.
Yeah, I think coaching matters quite a bit. I think that Frank Reich will find the way to get the least out of the Jets offense is my kind of opinion on this, even if they're all talented players. And speaking of Omar Cooper Jr., towards the end of the first round of rookie drafts, he's a first round receiver. He was definitely a trust the tape guy. Like if you looked at the numbers and the analytics, never had 1,000 yards in his college career. Despite playing 16 college games last year, Elijah Surratt was mainly the number one target in that offense. But Omar Cooper has the yards after catch ability, has the separation ability that you covet. And I do think, very similar to what you said about Sadiq, he's probably not the type of rookie that'll get out to a blazing hot start, A, because he plays for a bad team, and B, because I do think he needs time to develop. So you and I and Mason and Nathan are kind of like some of the highest on the site on Omar Cooper Jr., but even we can recognize that at 109, you're barely getting a top 100 asset here. It's not like you're getting a studly dominant asset. As we talked about in early May, this is not a very good rookie class generally, especially at this portion of the board.
Yeah, pretty much in agreement here. I did take my stance, which is why I have Sadiq ranked higher than him, but whoever ends up emerging as the number two target earner in this offense will have upside depending on who the quarterback is next year. And I do believe that the Jets are going to be picking somewhere between maybe not number one overall, because I do have more faith in the offense, although the defense, with the Cowboys improvements, with the Bengals improvements, with insert defense here's improvements, like I would pretty much pick a safe guess that the Jets are going to be the bottom ranked defense in the league.
Maybe the Dolphins would be worse. Maybe. I don't know. There's some bad defenses out there. I would say in all formats too, by the way, I would take Sadiq over Cooper, even in a non-tight end premium, for those of you guys that play in non-tight end premium leagues, just because it's way easier to become a top 6 to 8 dynasty tight end, which is where Sadiq kind of almost already is for some people, versus, you know, a top end dynasty wide receiver. There's a lot more competition at that position. So
I agree.
Moving into where it gets ugly, in dynasty rookie drafts. For those of you guys that are picking 111, 112, 110, go trade your pick for a veteran. If you're a competitive team and you have your own first round pick from last year, go trade that pick for a veteran and try and win again if you're in that camp. Generally speaking, this is the area of the board where it's not great. In super flex formats, we have to put some respect on Ty Simpson because he is potentially going to be a long-term starter for Sean McVay someday. However, Ty Simpson is not a good quarterback prospect. You and I both had qualms with his film. Generally speaking, he's being elevated by the Rams situation.
But Corey, you're going to tell the people that you bled the entire clock just because of how much you didn't want to take Ty Simpson in one of our leagues?
Yeah. So in early May, when Danny and I were in a dynasty rookie draft, I was picking 110, and Cooper, Concepcion, and Sadiq were already off the board. I already had Drake May, Justin Herbert, and Baker Mayfield, and Malik Willis on my roster as well. So I was loaded at quarterback. And I literally bled the clock overnight trying to trade away this pick. I eventually did sell Ty Simpson plus some capital to Doc for Sam Laporta and Zay Flowers. But yeah, I just picked. And that's why you take him. Like, even if you don't need a quarterback, you kind of need to put some respect on the fact that he's a Rams first round draft pick. He's probably going to have a long, value accumulation window. As long as he's not starting games, he's not going to lose any value. And also, too, he's a quarterback, right? Like, if he turns out to be good, he'll really gain a lot of value in the dynasty market. Look what happened. Michael Penix started 3 games his rookie season. And became a top 15 dynasty quarterback on the market off of three games.
I had him in one spot, got a first round pick for him.
I got the 104 for him last, or 105 for him last year. I took Trevion Henderson.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. The reason why you're able to get that deal done, and I guess this is another like semi small tangent to point to you guys that are watching right now. This is a dynasty video. If you're watching this right now, maybe you haven't had your dynasty draft. You might not want Ty Simpson, but you know what you do? Your due diligence. Corey bled the entire clock. He tried to make a trade. Nothing was happening. At the time of that,
I literally reached out to every manager who might have been interested in quarterback, like seven different people.
And what did you do? You didn't take the first deal that came to you. Somebody's like, oh, I'll offer you some bullshit like the 205 in my 27 third. It's like, well, no, okay. A starting quarterback, or not starting quarterback, a first round quarterback is worth more than that on the open market. You held firm. You got a deal, like you said, Sam Laporta and Zay Flowers for Simpson and a piece is what you said?
I gave him my 27 first. Sorry, AJ's 27 first, who has a better team than I do. Plus league, Ty right? Simpson and a 27 second. And I got Sam Laporta and Zay Flowers and a half tight end premium, which to me was worth it because I'm a competitive team.
Yeah, great deal for your situation. I'm sure if I'm not mistaken, Doc is actually trying to retool now because he's been competing for a few years. So it was just kind of a match made in heaven. He has the opportunity to weigh it on Simpson. And you just said, hey, listen, Simpson might not start for a year, 2 years, 2.5 years. So you get off of that type of asset for production.
Yeah, exactly. So Simpson, I know he's, again, maybe you like Sim. If you like Simpson, you should be taking him at 107, 108, 109. I just don't, I didn't like the prospect. I didn't think he had, I think at best, he's like I don't even want to say he's Brock Purdy at best. I don't think he processes the way Brock Purdy does. I don't think he's as accurate as Brock Purdy. I think he can create and has a similar arm talent to Brock Purdy, but I don't think he plays the game mentally the way that Brock Purdy does. So, but if you like him, that's kind of what you're envisioning is that he turns into Brock Purdy 2.0. Well, for the Sean McVay say, offense.
For merit to that, you mentioned the processing of Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy didn't process like Brock Purdy till Brock Purdy started working with Kyle Shanahan. So maybe the Rams are like, oh, Simpson, we see the tools. We see that he understands the game well, but once he works with McVay, he's going to be an absolute pro, read the game like the back of his hand. Like, I guess that's probably the bet they made, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you can turn him into Brock Purdy, then obviously that would be the bet that you're making. Jonah Coleman, both of us very, very high on Coleman, the prospect. He is the second best day three running back prospect since Cam Scataboo last year and higher than Bashel Tootin last year as well. So Jonah Coleman was underdrafted because of a slow 40 time. He didn't really run. He didn't test. But you and I both are very big believers in the tape that we watched of a guy who can do everything on all three downs. The only thing missing really is the fact that he's not super fast and not super explosive, but David Montgomery is not super fast. Le'Veon Bell was not super fast. James Conner was not super fast. We've seen many fantasy running backs be not super fast and still be really good for fantasy because they can command volume and affect the game on all three downs. Jonah Coleman, the best pass protecting running back in this class, no questions asked. I do think that for Denver, J.K. Dobbins is an injury question mark, only on a one-year deal. R.J. Harvey proved to be inefficient on the ground. We see real blood in the water here that Jonah Coleman could absolutely win this job.
Absolutely. Everything we have heard from Sean Payton talking about how he views him as a three down back, loving his toughness between the tackles, the short yardage, that was another very good quote that came out of there. Like, it's hard not to look at Jonah Coleman, look at the fact that J.K. Dobbins hasn't stayed healthy, look at the fact that R.J. Harvey is one of the single worst rushers between the tackles in the league last year, and this Denver Broncos offense can be a top 10 to 12th unit. If Jonah Coleman, by week four, by week five, by week six, earns an opportunity in this backfield, he's going to earn the whole damn job.
Yeah, and it's a huge gamble, but at this 100%. Point in the board, like I said, the 111, this is the 111 in both of our rankings. The 111 in both of our rankings is barely a top 120 startup asset for us. So again, let me reiterate, if you're competitive, you should probably just trade the 111 for a contending asset. Go trade for Javonte Williams, go trade for Josh Jacobs, whatever. But if you're going to actually take the swing on Jonah Coleman at 111, the upside is that he turns into Cam Scataboo 2.0.
Yep. I completely agree. And it's Cam Scataboo 2.0 without a lower body injury and without being tethered to a bottom five offensive situation in the league.
Yeah, he's running behind the single best run blocking offensive line in football last year.
Not even close either.
If you combine all the Denver Broncos starting running back production last year, it was an RB1 in fantasy. RJ Harvey when he was the starter, J.K. Dobbins when he was the starter.
If I offered you prime Mark Ingram as the upside here, a perennial guy who was a top 15 back, even despite, you know, dealing with multiple committees in his past, like, yeah, am I going to say Jonah Coleman's going to go out there and be a full, you know, 20 opportunity per game back? No, like, I think they're going to have roles in this backfield, but if you're telling me one of these backs ends up being that 15 to 18 plus opportunity guy, Jonah Coleman does every single thing on the field well. He just doesn't run fast.
Yeah. Denzel Boston, we already made mention too. Same thing as Casey Concepcion. Only unfortunate part for those of us that were picking in the late first round, or those of you guys that might be picking in the late first round, early second round, if Boston had gone to any other team that didn't already draft a first round receiver and wasn't the Cleveland Browns, we could have been talking about Boston being the very clear 111 in this class. Like, if he had been taken by the Panthers at, you know, the early second round, or the Raiders in the early second round, he would have been very easily the 111 in this class, and we probably would have ranked him over Ty Simpson.
I go a step further. If you get a decent landing spot, let's just say a clear opportunity to eventually be like a top two overall weapon, which I guess you have in Cleveland, because we don't know if Concepcion's going to hit. We don't know what it's going to look with Fannin. Like, there is obviously upside that Boston in an ambiguous room could end up being the number one there. But if it was very clear, like, oh, this team's got a number one and no clear number two after them, like, Boston could have been like the 108 in the class, 107 in the class.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, the Bills would have taken him or something like that. Like, we could have been talking about him as a really, really good option. Again, he just got screwed by landing spot. Yeah. But that being said, many of the best rookie picks, period, have come when people overvalue landing spot. We don't know if Cleveland's going to always be a dumpster fire. What if Casey Concepcion and Denzel Boston can coexist together because they draft Arch Manning or something next year? And Arch Manning's an instant success because he has some good talent around him with a young running back and a couple young receivers and a young tight end. So don't write off Denzel Boston, but what you shouldn't do is draft both Casey Concepcion and Denzel Boston on the same fantasy team. So if you have the 107 and the 111 or the 112 or something, maybe just bypass Denzel Boston if you already took Concepcion, or vice versa. Take Sadiq instead of Concepcion if you want to take Boston with your later pick. Because I do tend to think that for the ultimate upside scenario for either Concepcion or Boston to play out, that one of them would have to be slightly disappointing in fantasy for the other one to be really great.
Yeah, and the beauty of Browns camp right now, which almost makes me think the narrative is just like anti-vet on this team, because the amount of drumbeat that Boston and Concepcion have been getting has been nonstop every single day, it feels like.
Yeah, and both of them have really nice ceiling cases. It's just they might eat into each other until there's a great quarterback here to really right the ship. So yep. Eli Stower is the last guy of this tier. He's only in this tier for me. You have him a little bit lower. I guess I'll explain myself, because I am higher than you on the site. You have him buried compared to the rest of the experts on the site. This is a player take thing for you. I'll let you make your piece in a second. For me, Eli Stower is a very good prospect on paper. When you looked at his prospect profile, you saw a guy that had everything he needed to do to be able to be a receiving tight end. Now, Dallas Goedert is there for a one-year deal for the Philadelphia Eagles, but I do think in that 1 year, Eli Stowers is going to ask a million questions in practice, soak up all he needs to become the long-term starting tight end. The way that Howie Roseman framed it on the phone call with Eli Stowers seemed to me like Dallas Goedert's gone after this year. Eli Stowers is going to be the starting tight end going forward. And while Dallas Goedert has never been a top 3 to 5 fantasy tight end on any given season, because in this case, Mekhi Lemon and Devontae Smith will be there. In previous cases, it was other receivers. I still think Eli Stowers can be a perennial solid tight end. And given his receiving profile, he's just the type of player I want to bet on when the board looks as ugly as it does in the early second round of rookie drafts this year.
Yeah, my main gripe with him is he wasn't even my tight end too in terms of my prospect rankings. He goes to a situation that I think is at least cloudy in the intermediate. And even when he does project to be that starting tight end next year, you're more optimistic on the passing volume of the Eagles. You mentioned 550 Jalen Hurts pass attempts as your projection, even though he's never crossed that at all in his entirety of his NFL career. On top of that, with Eli Stowers, no, he actually has never crossed over 540.
He played 15 games that year, but the Eagles' offense threw more than that.
Second most in terms of attempts per game. My apologies then. Regardless, though, I had Max Clair with a higher rate. I had Eli Raritan, Oscar Delp well within the range for him. So Eli Stowers, I haven't really moved, because there's nothing that's happened this offseason that, in my opinion, would merit me moving him where I already had him.
Well, he went in the second versus those guys going in the third.
Even after the NFL draft, like, I had Clair, Raritan, Delp all in that area. To me, Stowers is a part of that group. He's not just some mythical, oh, he's a tier of his own after Sadiq.
Of course. If you didn't view that way as a prospect, most of us who were high on Stowers like myself did. If you didn't view him that way as a prospect, why would you change it? That's totally understandable. I could just quickly showcase in the prospect model where Stowers was. Like Sadiq is right here at 13, just where Loveland and Ingram and Andrews and stuff. And Stowers was right down here. So in the prospect model, he was a little bit ahead of, you know, Max Clair and Justin Jolie and those type of guys. But again, if that's not your opinion of Eli Stowers, then it makes sense why you wouldn't have him there.
So funny enough, the guy that was directly lower than him on that list is my worry for him. Like, what Mike if Gesicki? It's just a Mike Gesicki?
Yeah, that's totally fair. But to be fair, though, I would bet on Mike Gesicki's profile any day of the week if he was in the draft every year, because that profile is a receiving tight end.
Sure, but the context there was that he wasn't good enough in line to be viewed as a clear tight end one option. And again, similar draft capital. It's not like, you know, Stowers was a significantly better prospect than Gesicki was. I guess if you want to say if we simulated the Gesicki prospect profile 10 times.
Harold Fannin's a realistic outcome for Eli Stowers because it was a scheme-specific thing where Fannin was able to turn into what he was able to turn into. Like, I think if Gesicki had come to the Browns last year as a rookie with his exact prospect profile, he might have been just as good as Harold Fannin was his rookie season. To me, it was like Gesicki's a little before his time as far as the type of tight end prospect he was. I think schematically, it's hard to incorporate Gesicki into your offense.
I guess my issue there, Harold Fannin obviously ended up working out tremendously. That's like a one-of-one situation. How many times is it going to be where like the entire wide receiver core is decaying around you? I mean, in fact, the team literally went with two of their first three picks this year, grabbed wide receivers because of how desolate the room was last year. Like, I think Harold Fannin was obviously a good player. I'll give him credit. Very, very good with the ball in his hands. Clearly a big win for where they drafted him. But also, how many times is he going to get that opportunity?
Probably not very many. And honestly, I'm going to show the F and G tiers together because if you wanted to take the guy that I have ranked, like we have collectively ranked at the very end of this range, like Deshaun Stribling, for example, at 201, which happened in a rookie draft that you were in.
Yep.
Go ahead. If that was your conviction on the prospects, like for me and for us collectively, a guy like Elijah Surratt, who had a very clean projection, good PPR zone coverage beater, only Jordan Tyson beat zone coverage better than him in the NFL draft. I'll go on my three favorite prospects and then you can go on your three favorite in this range. Elijah Surratt goes to the Ravens. The Ravens, my expectation is that they'll throw the ball more. The Amon-Ra role of Declan Doyle's offense is what I'm hoping Elijah Surratt gets, which is the slot receiver of this team. So that's why I have him ranked super aggressively. Nick Singleton, again, when shit hits the fan and all these prospects are not very good and all have warts, I'm going to take the 4.3 speed 225-pound running back who was a five-star recruit who has an opportunity in the Tennessee Titans backfield to actually command some touches.
So at the time we're recording this last night, I was on stream with Zach and with Sammy, and I kind of threw this scenario out there. So obviously people have been saying 2026 Bashaul Tuten is kind of like what 2024 Chase Brown represented. In my opinion, 2025 Bashaul Tuten might very well be what the Titans are this upcoming year. And then who knows, 2027, what if Nicholas Singleton is Bashaul Tuten, is Chase Brown?
Yeah, I could see. I mean, well, Singleton in the prospect model's best comparable prospect was Chase Brown. So that's partially also why. Obviously, he didn't have the same level of refined production and stuff, but he was productive for 4 years, did have a lot of receiving upside, and that's why I'm just betting on the ceiling. I recognize that there's maybe a 20% chance he actually becomes anything for fantasy, but I do know that if on that 20% chance he becomes something for fantasy, he can be a league-winning asset because of his receiving skill set and his speed and his size.
Take a swing in a bad draft class, dude. Like, realistically, none of these guys are guaranteed to hit. Take the one that if he does hit, has a lot of upside. Like, I have Singleton at 17 overall, but if you wanted to take him over some of the receivers I had here, if you wanted to take him over that full range of tight end, the two quarterbacks, like, he's clearly got upside. Obviously, the prospect profile was incomplete because he was pretty sporadic on a year-to-year basis, but he clearly showed when he was at his best. Height, weight, speed, receiving profile. Burst. What more do you want?
I mean, knowing how to play running back would be nice.
100%
for a running back, but coaches can teach you that. Like you said, Brock Purdy wasn't Brock Purdy until he learned how to process in Kyle Shanahan's offense. What happens if Brian Daboll's scheme really accentuates Nick Singleton? The other point to that regard, again, if you guys were following us in April and whatnot, you would have heard me talk about Drew Aller like a million times in this area of the board. When I don't love really anything about any of the prospects, I'm going to take the guy who has league-winning upside. And Drew Aller's ceiling to me is Jackson Dart. And that's what he can become if things go well, because he's a physical, big runner with a good arm, very, very strong start to his college career. It really tapered off this season with the injury. But when I went through the tape and I kind of diagnosed some of the things that I was seeing, I looked at a guy that was kind of getting screwed by his scheme, is kind of getting screwed by his receiver core. And the Pittsburgh Steelers have good receivers, and Mike McCarthy can develop quarterbacks, and Aaron Rodgers is a hell of a guy to learn from when your biggest problem is mechanics, accuracy, and footwork. I mean, you're not going to find a better guy to learn from in his prime than Aaron Rodgers. So for me, I'm just high on the ceiling swing in super flex leagues. Man, you get a starting quarterback in this draft class in the early to mid second round who could become a top four startup round asset guy like Jackson Dart has become. That's worth it to me.
Yeah, and hopefully for the case of my guy here as we transition, that ends up materializing. Maybe Drew Aller ends up being that, you know, big-time starting quarterback. First guy I will talk about, you're hovering on Hurst. I will talk about him in a second as well. I want to mention Jeremy Bernard. He's my 13th-ranked player, 201 currently in my rankings. I did update him because ultimately he's been one of my favorite targets in best ball. The Mike McCarthy hiring, a lot of 11 personnel, a receiver that we both thought was pro-ready. The only real hurdle to playing time, truthfully, is going to be the health of Michael Pittman, and you're going to be higher on Michael Pittman than me throughout the year. I guess my take has always been, is Michael Pittman a dominant enough talent where if Jeremy Bernard is impressing early, that all of a sudden this can't be the number one intermediate option on this team? I do favor Pittman for that role, but the fact that I can make the argument makes Jeremy Bernard in this draft class so intriguing. On top of that, even if he opens up as the number three receiver, there's going to be enough volume to go around in this team.
Yeah, that's how you copium your way into Jeremy Bernard, is that he ends up just being the safest pick in this range and turns into, like, in 2023, the second round had a lot of misses in it. Jonathan Mingo and guys like that. Jaden Reed and Khalil Shakir would have been some of the best picks in that round. I see the same kind of outcome for Jeremy Bernard, is that if he ends up being one of the best picks in that round, a lot of guys bust around him. Drew Aller, hey, Nick Singleton, those types of guys are boomer bust prospects. I'm just going to swing on them because I did like the upside. Chris Bell, same thing, comes in with the injury. Still hasn't been cleared yet, which I don't love, to be honest with you. Yeah. And I feel a little bit worse about Chris Bell now than I did about early May when we were drafting our dynasty rookie draft. So I moved him down. I had him at 17 at one point. He's now at 20 for me. So I did move him down just a little bit. But at the same time, the Dolphins have a wide open depth chart at receiver. I think this Malik Willis experiment will be over after this season. So I'm not really worried about the immediate short-term production of Chris Bell right now. I'm just more so worried about what can he be long-term. Could he be the long-term number one receiver of this team if he hits? Could he be the long-term number two, high-end number two if he ends up hitting? And like we said for Cleveland and the Jets, I expect them to have a quarterback upgrade in next year's draft.
Yeah, he fell from 14 to 18 for me for that exact reason. Just kind of murky. On top of that, we are getting some good buzz on Greg Dulcich. We are getting some good buzz on Malik Washington. Like, when he does come back.
Even Caleb Douglas, the other rookie receiver that they took in the third round, is getting more buzz than him because he's not healthy.
Like, I even think when he's back on the field fully healthy, like, he's not going to be a smash in year one. So I did have to reflect that in my rankings. The two guys I do want to mention real quick, too. You mentioned Ted Hurst. Absolutely love him. I do think from an archetype perspective, might be slower this year because we have gotten the McMillan buzz. Obviously, Igbuka's getting hyped to beyond extend at this point, and Chris Godwin's the veteran of the room. But just say, for example, what if this is Chris Godwin's last year? What if Chris Godwin is not the same Chris Godwin after the year? What if Chris Godwin has a bad injury this year? Like, there are risk levels ahead of him to the point where the skill set that Ted Hurst has is 101 in this receiving room. And I truthfully do believe if he gets the opportunity to earn those outside X wide receiver snaps, we could be looking at a Michael Gallup level trajectory.
Yeah, the issue I have with Ted Hurst, and I did move him down even more than I already, because I was a little pessimistic on him even during rookie drafts. I moved him down to 19. I had him at, I think, 16 before. It sounds like he's the number five receiver on the team right now. Tez Johnson and Jalen McMillan are both working ahead of him. And I also think when he gets on the field this year, it'll be sacrificial X stuff more so than like using, you know, whatever skill sets he might have, because I do think he's just a really raw player. And I think you have to be patient with a prospect like this, and that could result in some fluctuation in dynasty value. So if I'm in a dynasty rookie draft now, I feel slightly worse about him now than I did before. Because I do think it's A, going to be a challenge for him to get on the field, and B, when he gets on the field, I don't think he's going to be like a advanced metrics guy. We're not going to look at him and be like, oh my God, like 2.8 yards per out run or something like that. I think he's going to probably just be a sacrificial X when he's on the field.
Yeah, really curious how he's used. I thought obviously he had the upside from a pure, obviously not exactly one-to-one because this guy proved the past year, 1,400 yards, 9 touchdowns, that he could be one of the best receivers in the league. But in terms of like a raw version, small school version of like George Pickens was as a prospect, of what Michael Gallup, like I said, was as a prospect, that was my literal comp, I still am willing to take Ted Hurst in the mid to late second round because of that upside. However, a guy that I did move above him is Catron Allen. Very ambiguous running back room. A lot of upside, in my opinion, if you are able to hit on the Washington Commanders running back. I do favor Rashad White, and I think JCM should get the immediate opportunity ahead of Catron Allen. But I just think Catron Allen, like Jonah Coleman, very fundamental back, can operate in all three downs, very, very good in pass pro, has showed that he can occupy third down, long down and distance snaps as well at Penn State this past year. Like, to me, he just checks every box to be a solid running back. And if he does have a scenario this year where he becomes fantasy relevant in redraft, maybe he's a waiver claim in week 10 and he has a strong finish, is he a guy that I'm going to want to keep on a year-to-year basis? Maybe not. Maybe I have a sell high opportunity a la a Damian Pierce, a la a Michael Carter, a la, you know, insert day three Algier running back here. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's going in to play a role that he is replacing in Brian Robinson. I think that that's what he can be right away. I actually have him the highest on the site of anybody. You're actually the lowest on the site of anybody, which is kind of
surprising. I got to talk to the devs about that because he's higher in my overalls on my end.
It might have been, if you just moved him up, it might just be delayed.
Gotcha.
But yeah, Catron, I think an opportunity to compete for a starting job with a fourth, fifth round running back who both of us had as a top five back in the class definitely makes sense. Same team, Antonio Williams has an opportunity to compete for starting reps at receiver. I do think that Stephon Diggs and or Brandon Ayuk, probably Diggs, most likely based on recent reports, will be added to this receiver corps. So the idea that people had, Danny, when you and I were drafting in late April, early May, Antonio Williams, number two receiver of this team, doubt it. I think he's probably the slot receiver of this team, and they're going to add a veteran addition in the next couple of weeks to compete for targets with Terry McLaurin, and then they brought in Chig Okonkwo. Antonio Williams is a good prospect, but he wasn't an excellent prospect. And I don't think that the Commanders were ever going to go into the season with him as the number two receiver. So Antonio Williams, if you like him, I think that if he hits, it'll look something like a Khalil Shakir, Jaden Reed type of hit where he is a small win and he can be productive flex option for you. But generally, if you're swinging for a ceiling, that's why I have Aller ranked higher. That's why I have Singleton ranked higher. That's why I have Surratt ranked higher. And then the last guy was Jacoby Lane, who was actually drafted before Elijah Surratt of the two Ravens receivers, but he is a little bit more of a raw guy. Going to play X receiver, I would imagine. In an ideal world, to me, the three receiver set is Jacoby Lane at X, Zay Flowers at Z, Elijah Surratt in the slot. But Rashad Bateman and Tez Walker are going to muddy up this receiver core a little bit more than I initially thought in May. So we'll see what happens throughout training camp. But I do think that one of these rookies is going to be profitable. I don't know which one it's going to be at this point in time. So I want to rank both of them kind of with the expectation that they could both hit. But I'm going to do the exact same thing I said with the Browns, which is probably not draft both of them on the same dynasty team.
Yeah, I'm just far more on the Elijah Surratt side here than I am Jacoby.
I am too, based on my rankings, for what it's worth.
Yeah, despite the team, I guess, disagreeing with us, like straight up.
Yeah.
But overall, in terms of like the more pro-ready player, the guy that has the more fantasy-friendly role, the guy that is the more experienced college receiver, like to me, Elijah Surratt is 80 out of 100 times going to be my bet here.
And he is for me too. I have him at 13 and I have Jacoby Lane at 17. So I would definitely take Surratt more often than not. But in most of the rookie drafts I did, you were getting Jacoby Lane and Surratt sometimes towards the end of the second round, even into the third round for Jacoby Lane. So the last tier we can quickly rattle through. Carson Beck is ranked here because he has an opportunity to get on the field right away. Could he have a this year's Tyler Shuck ascendance? He could. It's possible. Like if Jacoby Brissett stinks for the first couple of weeks and then he plays well down the stretch, he could end up going into the next season as the Cardinals starter. I just think it's highly doubtful and he's going to need to do what Shuck did, which is win games and make sure that the Cardinals have the 13th pick in the draft or something like that so that they can't pick a quarterback high. So that's my worry for Carson Beck. But if you want to take the gamble, you like the prospect. I thought he had some redeeming qualities on film. He has good weapons and that kind of thing. You mentioned some of these tight ends here. Eli Raritan and Justin Jolie, both slated to be the number two tight ends for their team, at least early on. Eli Raritan behind Hunter Henry, getting some hype as like a high upside player, I believe is what Hunter Henry called him. And then Justin Jolie behind Evan Engram, definitely more of a project because he's not an exceptional blocker at this point in time. The goal here, I'm actually the only one with him ranked in redraft. The goal here for both of these guys is to just be on waiver wire speed dial in redraft. If one of them gets hurt, maybe they can get on the field. Kind of what we saw with Gadsden being like the absolute ceiling for both of them as rookies.
Yeah, so a little bit of context too. I did lower Jolie a little bit. I don't know why he didn't show up for me, but I lowered him a little bit from where I had him just based off the fact that from Broncos fans that I've talked to, it kind of feels like him and Dallin Bentley are kind of like competing against each other right now, and they don't necessarily know which one is going to be the better projectable going into this year.
And if that's
I'm higher on Jolie, but
yeah, if that's true, Jolie's not the player that I thought he was in college.
Yeah.
However, if Jolie's the player I thought he was in college and he's just mentally getting some reps in right now, then he should annihilate Dallin Bentley in a
competition. I agree. So I agree, which is why I'm still going to have Jolie like, you know, not as high as I did, but decently high. But
you'll still get a lot of Jolie, by the way, having him ranked at 30 versus having him ranked at 26, because he was going in the mid to late third round of most of my rookie drafts early in the fourth at sometimes.
Yep, for sure.
And then the other guys here, Deshaun Stribling, were obviously lower on. I did move him up. I had him at 29, I think it was before. I have him at 24 now. And we haven't actually even heard bullish signals on him. Like, most of the reports that have come out about Deshaun Stribling have been mainly like they're focused on 2027 and beyond with him, because Mike Evans, an older receiver, obviously you get to learn from him. Ricky Pearsall, unproven, but I expect him to out target and out produce Deshaun Stribling. And then the thing I think that's causing Deshaun Stribling to not be a huge part of their game plan this year is Christian Kirk. I think Christian Kirk is probably going to be their slot receiver for the most likely scenario. And Stribling will be like the fourth receiver on the team early on. So he was overdrafted. He wasn't as good of a prospect as where he was drafted, but Stribling does have some redeeming qualities. So I want to respect him a little bit and put him near the 2-3 turn as opposed to the mid third where I had him ranked a couple of months ago.
So I moved him up as well. He's 26 for me. You can take him above the quarterbacks, above Antonio Williams, above the tight ends. Two factors there. First, Christian Kirk actually left the field yesterday with an injury. So we'll monitor that, see how severe it was, but that was a report that came out. And B, maybe they just view Juwan Jennings as, or Stripling as, the one-to-one Juwan Jennings replacement, and maybe we see some more snaps in the slot from Pearsall.
Maybe. Yeah, again, I think both of us can kind of agree, though, that like of these, some of these receivers in this range, Stribling has a like a harder chance getting on the field than like Zachariah Branch does if he's good, for example, or Elijah Surratt does, or, you know, Jeremy Bernard does. Like, I think it's more likely that a lot of these guys are at least the third receiver on their team, and Ted Hurst and Stribling and some of these guys are probably got an uphill battle to be a top three receiver on their team, at least early on in their careers. Again, these are dynasty rankings. You can hold these guys for multiple years, et cetera, but generally we know that it's a bull signal to produce as a rookie. So if Stribling's not going to produce as a rookie, that's obviously going to harm his outlook down the line in dynasty. Zach Branch, I kind of just made mention to. It sounds like he's making some waves in camp. It sounds like he looks good. However, he has two target alphas and a really good running back receiver in his offense. And I don't really trust that he's going to get up to speed right away, because he was a very raw prospect. But if he has 60 targets, high yards per route run, good advanced metrics as a rookie, that wouldn't totally shock me, because Branch was an extremely talented high school player, came in as a freshman, was highly touted. He needs development, though, and the Falcons and Tua Tagovailoa and Kevin Stefanski, I'm not sure that's the right environment for him, but I do think Tua is an accurate quarterback. So if he's going to get short targets, he might have an 85% catch rate and do some stuff after the catch.
Yeah, no, he's going to have the most fun highlight tape, Rondale Moore type of season that you'll see.
He could, but I also think, and you're going to hate this comp, but I also think it's within the range of outcomes that if it goes well for Zachariah Branch, I'm saying like he surprises a lot of people, it could look like Luther Burden's rookie season.
I mean, I just don't see it. Very high upside.
I see it.
Very high upside, but again, over 50% of his sampled routes this past year were on screen passes. A lot of his production came after the catch. Like, to me, it's more so just we have our high upside volume targets. London, 170 targets here. Kyle Pitts, 90 to 110 here. Bijan Robinson probably even going to get a big uptick even from what he saw last year, which last year he was at, what, 90? Like, yeah. I just look at the overall pie, and then I'm like, is Tua going to throw the ball 700 times? Because if he throws the ball 700 times, I can see that path. But if it's more so a 580 to 620 attempt offense, I just can't math it out.
Yeah, I have him projected for 56 targets, 40 catches, 426 and two. He's kind of my Jeremy Bernard, where like late in underdog drafts, I like taking the upside swing on him because he has implied upside if Pitts or London were to go down as well. And I generally think he was a talented player, and I want to, and I think for best ball specifically, he can have spike weeks because he could take a 60-yard slant to the house or something like that, because that
it's the type of athlete he is, and he also has special teams appeal and that kind of thing. So final guy that we have here is Demond Claiborne. It's a wide open backfield. Jordan Mason, Aaron Jones don't really scare me. I loved Demond Claiborne, the prospect, from what he could turn into. But as of now, he needs a lot of work. So I do expect Aaron Jones and Mason to be like the early season ball carriers and starting running backs. But it wouldn't shock me if Claiborne ends up being one of the bigger waiver additions from a redraft standpoint at some point in the year if one of Aaron Jones or Jordan Mason were to get injured.
So this was slightly facetious, and obviously I was doing this as a pro Mason take, but on the live stream I mentioned yesterday with Zach and Sammy, I kind of said, like, what if the 2026 running back room for the Vikings is just like what the 2025 Cowboys were, where it's like Jones gets hurt and he's like the Miles Sanders of the group. Jordan Mason's the thick back that scores touchdowns. He's like the Javonte Williams, and the Demond Claiborne's like the Jaden Blue.
All I'm saying is that's not really the right way to go about that comparison. I Demond Claiborne, Jaden Blue, correct. However, the highest drafted running back of the team was the right answer, Javonte Williams, and that's Aaron Jones.
Jordan Mason versus Aaron Jones, friendly gentleman's bet right now.
I don't want to be this guy betting on a 31-year-old running back, but I just frankly think that when healthy, Aaron Jones has proven he's better than Jordan Mason. So
let me ask you this. One final thing is, how many inside the five carries do you think the Vikings had last year?
Probably like sub 10.
Six.
Yeah, it was not great. They were like quietly a bottom five offense in points per game, net yards per attempt. Like, they were a really bad offense. It was like just having Kyler Murray and being an average team would be a huge uptick for whoever the starting running back is for that team. So that is our top 30-ish or so, 36 or so dynasty rookie rankings. Again, there was some differences from our first video. We actually, since there was a shift because I moved Ty Simpson into a tier of him of his own, because I kind of feel that way about him. Like, you can't take That's any fine. Of the other guys below him, but I wouldn't take him over any of the guys above him. So that is the Superflex rookie rankings updated. For those of you guys that have had rookie drafts this entire time, let us know your rookie draft hauls. For those of you guys that have rookie drafts coming up, let us know your questions down below. And again, it's still relevant. If you guys want to go get the Dynasty Rookie Draft Guide, you want to watch the Dynasty Rookie film breakdowns, they're on the site. You can go to flockfantasy.com. You can sign up for an annual Mother Flocker right now, and you'll get access to all of that stuff. You'll also get access to the Dynasty Decisions 2.0. If you sign up for an annual Mother Flocker, you get this for free. We give you your three biggest decisions. We can help you with your rookie drafts, give you a plan of action, and so on. And of course, too, you can get that underdog code bonus as well. If you're doing redraft leagues and dynasty stuff right now, you'll get our 2026 projections, weekly start sit rankings, Dynasty Rookie Draft Guide, which I just made mention to. You'll get all the rookie film breakdowns and all the prospect cards, and the redraft guide, all for free when you sign up using code FSC on underdog. Both of those will be linked down below in the description. And again, if you just want to get it on the site, all that stuff is available to you. You can use the prospect model, Dynasty Decisions, live streams. You can get rookie rankings, rookie draft guide, everything over there. That'll all be linked down below in the pinned comment and in the description. But with that being said, peace out. We'll talk to you soon.